Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Iowa's Politics. Look at this primary week in politics. J.R., 22% voted.
High in the last decade.
Highest since 2002.
Yep.
When it was Doyle and a few others.
Doyle, Falk, Barrett.
Right. Okay, we don't have any West Iowa's there because we got so much to cover. Let's look at now. It's Tony Evers versus Scott Walker. Let's run quickly through their bios. The governor is 50. He was in the assembly in 1993, 2002, then Milwaukee County executive, elected governor 2010, won a 2012 recall, reelected in 2014, ran for president, raised $100 million since 2010. And his running mate, of course, is Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish. And quickly, the political bio of Tony Evers. He's 66, former teacher, principal, district superintendent, deputy superintendent, 2001 to 2009, elected state superintendent, 09-13, reelected 2017, third term, 41% of the Democratic primary, finishing second, Malin Mitchell, then, go
Colonel
ahead.
Roy's.
Anything surprising about that order?
It's interesting that Mitchell finished second, but I get the impression that's because Malin Mitchell had a number of unions who were doing things on the ground to turn people out for him. And when you're a campaign, you only have finite resources. You have to make a decision. You want to go up on the air and TV to spread your name ID or go door to door? Can you afford to do both? And it looked like Mitchell got help going door to door and turning people out, which I think is part of why he won Milwaukee County. Kelda had an advantage on TV compared to other candidates for governor. There's no dollar spent.
Kelda at 12%.
But by putting it there, how much did she have to put into infrastructure? And, you know, I'll never get a apples-to-apples comparison, but I don't know that she had as many troops on the ground as Mitchell did, thanks to that union support. Evers, meanwhile, won wire to wire. Every poll that we saw, he was up ahead. He seemed to solidify his base, and it got bigger as the campaign went on.
Yeah.
You know, give him credit. People may want to talk about being boring, but boring won.
Well, and I'll say
a big number.
I'll say it before, and I'll say it again. You had McCabe and you had Vineout going for the same progressive base of voters. Senator Kathleen Vineout, 8%, and Mike McCabe, 7%. And then you have, I'll call them the 5%ers, Mr. Matt Flynn and Madison Mayor Paul Soglin. It was, any PSs on that?
No, I don't know if there are any big surprises. I mean, I got the impression there could have been an opportunity for a progressive, you know, kind of the grassroots progressive populist, whatever you call it, like McCabe or Vineout, kind of surprising people.
Yeah.
But they just didn't have the money to communicate to voters who they were. I mean, you'd see a lot of signs, but those signs don't necessarily translate into, like, talking to thousands and thousands of voters. So there was that. Roy's gave the impression in the closing days that she had momentum. We will see in the report filed pre-election whether she spent that money that was right about how much she took out for second mortgage on her home.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting to see.
Right.
One thing I noticed was that nobody in that race really tried to tear down Tony Evers. Now, Matt Flynn did, but he was kind of a postscript in a lot of ways, what was going on. It was really Evers and could either Kelda or Malin catch fire and catch him. In the closing days, nobody went on TV and tore down Tony Evers. Nobody really attacked him. They had an opportunity maybe to define themselves as a new and unique candidate, and I'm not sure that they really did an effective job of that. And you have Evers just kind of plugging along and hit his 41%.
And I have a PS on Flynn. The election was held on the day that incredibly damning report by the Pennsylvania Attorney General came out documenting all the sex abuse by priest problems in the state of Pennsylvania. But anyway, let's listen to about a little bit more than a minute of the governor and then our Democratic nominee for governor, Tony Evers, on election night and then a press conference the next day. Let's hear from, first, Governor Walker.
We saw last night after both I won the primary and the Democrat running for governor won the primary that there could not be a more stark contrast, a clearer choice in this state between me and Tony Evers. And by that, I mean it's a choice between, do we want to take a giant step backwards Or do we want to continue to move forward? We want to continue to move forward. We need to keep Wisconsin working for generations to come. Thanks for being out here tonight. Thanks for all that you do. Most importantly, thanks for what you do between now and November 6th on to victory.
The facts are that Tony Evers failed to do his job as superintendent of public instruction to keep our students safe. A male teacher in Middleton was watching pornography on a computer in a classroom that offended other teachers, including at least one female teacher. I myself asked him to look at revoking that license. He cited some bureaucratic excuse. That's not doing your job. I would have revoked the license, and I would have said, make the courts forces to it. I think it was looking at a very weak interpretation of what he could do. I think the law would have been upheld, and I think he failed to do his job. And if you failed to do your job, you shouldn't be getting a promotion.
Okay, JR, the governor said this is about whether you want to go forward or you want to go backward with Tony Evers. And he also raised, and his campaign is running this ad, Tony Evers knew about the Middleton teacher. We're going to hear Tony Evers' response to that in a minute. So the opening theme from the governor, your impression?
Governor Walker knows he's in a difficult position. So it's actually the state GOP is running the ad. But immediately after kind of Evers was declared the winner, they released it. They had it in the can ready to go. Whoever won, they were going to go out and attack right away. That tells me a couple of things. One, Governor Walker is universally known in Wisconsin. There are very people who don't have an opinion about Governor Walker. He could maybe go up a little bit, but he's not going to go up a lot. You know, if you're in that position as a candidate, your other option is to tear down your opponent. They are going on a dual track. Governor Walker's in this positive ad about, you know, moving forward and more tax breaks, and the GOP's on this negative ad hitting Tony Evers about the school thing. By the way, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce is also up the TV ad. According to One Wisconsin Now, a liberal group that tracks TV buys, it's about $800,000 and change. It also attacks Evers' education. They're trying to take away the education platform that Evers has,
right,
and hit him. That, again, tells me Walker's in a difficult spot. They're trying to figure out a way, or they think they have a path to winning, even with that, with the headwind they might be going into, and part of this is a tear down Tony Evers.
And now let's hear from about a minute and 30 seconds of Tony Evers on election night and responding to the governor on that Middleton teacher. From Tony Evers.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Wisconsin. We did it. We did it. You may have heard this. You may have heard this. Scott Walker, believe it or not, has been going around and boasting that he is the education governor. Well, no way. Well, sure he is. Walker educated us on how to increase health care costs. And he educated us that cutting public schools hurts our kids. And he also educated us that you can play politics and not fix our roads. And Walker educated us that he has no clue on how to help Wisconsin families. I don't know about you folks, but I've had enough of Scott Walker's education. It's time for a change. I'm Tony Evers. I'm going to be your next governor. It's time for a change. Let's get to work. Thank you so much.
In regard to the ad that he's talking about now, we had a very difficult situation. We did that revocation by state law, and we changed state law so it fixed that loophole. Simple as that. I was following state law as a constitutional officer. That's what the people of Wisconsin expected of me as state superintendent. And so these type of attack ads are ridiculous, but we should expect that he's going to go on and on about this. This is going to be carpet bombing.
So now who's running ads to help Tony Evers, JR?
The Democratic Governor Association through a group called Stronger Wisconsin. This is important because in 2012 in the U.S. Senate race, Tommy Thompson won that GOP primary, emerged broke, and wasn't really on the air much the first few weeks. Timmy Baldwin hit him constantly.
He's not for you anymore.
Defined him. Right. The fact that DGA is responding with this ad right away, not really responding to the attacks, but more about trying to put some kind of filling out the picture of who Tony Evers is. It's very important for him to have a presence on the air and try to build his name ID to a wider audience because people are going to now start paying attention, like probably more so after Labor Day. But now's the time. It's actually election season in Wisconsin. Here we go. If this had been left unchecked for a couple weeks, it would be very damaging. That, I think it's a $1.8 million buy. That's a big help for him. have that there.
Let's look at seven issues. Feel free to add any other, JR, that will be dominant major themes, issues for the next, I don't know, how many weeks is it? What are we, 10?
2.5 months away, something like that.
Okay, highway funding. Foxconn tax incentives, tax breaks that are that the governor and his aides continue to say are tied to new jobs and investments by that Taiwanese company. Criminal justice reform, future prison populations, and whether we need a new state prison. Mm-hmm. You want to jump in any of these? So
interesting.
Far?
The highways one already played a little bit out on Wednesday, where Governor Walker went in a radio interview and said that Evers wanted to triple or raise the gas tax by a dollar, which would quadruple. I think it's like 33 cents a gallon right now, somewhere around that ballpark. Thank you. Wanted to raise it by a dollar. Evers' initial reaction was everything's on the table.
Everything's on the table.
But then his campaign put out a statement in the afternoon saying he was not going to raise it by a dollar. That's a lie. Little bit of a stumble there about that. The prison stuff, we've talked about this before. There's an opening for Walker to kind of, because they put a number on it of, you know, reducing it by half. Now, Evers wasn't a leading voice on this in the primary, so we'll see how it plays for him. But that's another place you can see Walker attack and Republicans attack him on the prison population.
And then state aid for K-12 public schools, that's already been played out. The UW system, tax breaks to keep Kimberly-Clark jobs in the state. We're not going to get a special session. So this is, I think that's going to be a dominant issue.
Yeah, let's go back to Foxconn. Governor Walker's out running ads because he knows it's a vulnerability. He's trying to put a message in Eau Claire and Green Bay and other places, Wausau, that it's going to benefit you. There's an open for Tony Evers to say, look, he kind of, you know, to put the Democrats' words, use their words, sold you down the river. You know, he gave away the bank to this this foreign company to bring this company, that plant there. Oh, by the way, Kimberly Clark, what do they do? Those are 450 jobs on the line. And if they don't do anything, what's that mean? If they do something, what's it mean? I mean, there's all kinds of like
in the what ifs
about
that. President Roger Roth.
Which, by the way, has already been identified by the Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee as one of its targets for the fall. That is normally a Republican seat.
I know.
In 2012, in the presidential race, when Barack Obama won the state by 7 points, I think it was, that was like nip and tuck. That's the only time I've seen that race, that district close in my 18 years covering the politics in Wisconsin.
And I want to talk next week about the 5 or 6 Senate campaigns that will decide which party controls the Senate. Okay, just a couple more issues. Changes to state income and sales tax. This is, would a Governor Evers come after the manufacturing and ag? And health care, Medicaid expansion. Tony Evers wants to take the federal money. So
yeah, sure, that's going to be an issue as well. Taking the money has been unpopular, so that's a vulnerability. It's something that Evers can put onto it. Now, with Walker, he's also got issues on highways and prisons because they have problems up at the youth prison. We've got prison guards continually turning in big time overtime. They're understaffed. But that's more of a management issue that you can make against Walker of he hasn't run the state well because of A, B, C, D, and E.
Yeah, okay.
That's what I hear.
The other major decision, it will be State Senator Leah Vukmir against U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin. Let's look quickly at their resumes. Senator Baldwin is 56, an attorney, former member of the Madison City Council, Dane County Board, State Assembly, U.S. House, elected U.S. Senator in 2012, first openly gay senator. Republican Senator Vukmir is 60, a registered nurse for her website says 37 years, represented TOSA in the state assembly, state senator, assistant majority leader. She got 49% of the GOP primary vote. You surprised by the 49?
No, I wasn't sure in talking to people how the race was going to go, but it was also because I've never seen a candidate outspent on the airwaves like more than 3-1 a statewide race and win. But it was kind of a battle of the infrastructure that the state GOP provided Vukmir. Plus talk radio Milwaukee versus what Nicholson can put up on the air via his allies. It wasn't him spending the money. It was outside groups or independent groups, mostly funded by Dick Uihlein, an Illinois businessman, who put the millions on the air for him. And it's just, you look at the map, and she did well where basically the heart of GOP country in Wisconsin.
I want to go, thanks, Chair, because I want to go to that map right now. And it's just amazing to me. Why did outstate Republicans favor Nicholson?
They saw the TV ads. So if you think about it, Vukmir's career has all been in southeastern Wisconsin. Yeah. She's been on talk radio a lot. She's got more of a, they know her better there. That's where the grassroots base is kind of at. What's fascinating to me is I got numbers on Wednesday that talked about she was outspent on TV in the Milwaukee media market the last 3 weeks, about more than 2-1.
Outspent in the Milwaukee media market.
10 counties, that media market. About $1 million, like $400,000-some.
Yeah.
She still won that media market, those 10 counties, with like 60% of the vote. She only lost one of them, Dodge County. Again, it tells people that, the grassroots, that's the combination to win a GOP nomination in Wisconsin, is do well in southeastern Wisconsin. That party infrastructure and talk radio. Jay Weber is a host of WISN. He endorsed Leah. I'm not sure where all the other hosts kind of fell, if they were really just pro Leah or fully endorsed Leah, but they seemed more inclined toward her from things that I saw. That still carries some sway.
The outstate Republicans that voted for Nicholson, are they going to be not receptive to Leah?
Excellent question. Who are the folks that turned out? You know, we don't know the Trump effect.
Are they the anti-Washington drain the swamp types out there?
We don't know what the Trump effect is. They both really try to embrace Trump in the final weeks, actually much of the campaign. I saw a drop-off in the vote for U.S. Senate compared to 6 years ago, 140,000 votes. There were 100,000 fewer votes for Republican Senate candidates than were for Democratic gubernatorial candidates.
Yes.
Even though there were a couple million, few million spent on TV in the Democratic governor primary versus 13 million in the Senate primary, it just suggests to people that there is a more jazzed up Democratic base right now than the Republican one.
So you had some outstate Democrats who chose to play in the primary for governor and not in the in the GOP.
Yeah, right? You only vote in one primary. So what I'm looking for down the road in this Senate race is, if I go look at the national map, and I'm a Republican, I have Indiana, Missouri, North Dakota, Montana, and West Virginia, where Trump won by double digits. Florida looks awfully good for Republicans right now. I have to defend Nevada, probably have to do some work in Arizona, might have to do some work in Tennessee to protect three Republican seats. That was 9 races before I even uttered the words Wisconsin. So if you're looking at money, I mean, people think money is like this, it just is everywhere. It's a finite resource, and it goes where it's most effective. Unless Leah is close to Tammy Baldwin in the end of September range, early October, I don't know it'll flow here. Now, in 2016, Ron Johnson was abandoned largely by national groups, but he had a group called Reform Wisconsin that was financed by Diane Hendricks, for the most part, who kept doing things on the air that helped him get his footing. And all of a sudden, in late October...
Regain his footing.
Late October... Well, he had been down by double digits almost, much of that race. End of October, that last Marquette poll had at 1 point, then the money came in. Mm-hmm. What I'm wondering here is, will there be something where can she keep it close? And then if it is close at the end, is Walker defining who's turning out November, whatever, 6th, whatever it is? Is it Tammy Baldwin? What kind of headwind is there? If it's still close, even if Baldwin's up by a bit, you could see some national money coming in. But right now, we're not behind the pecking order for Republicans who are going to spend money.
Okay, I'm going to run through quick 5 issues in the U.S. Senate debate, and then at the end of them, comment on them. Immigration, build the wall. Tammy doesn't want to build the wall. Health care, the future of the ACA, Affordable Care Act. The leadership, the style of President Trump. Leah's lashed herself pretty close to it. Mm-hmm. Tariffs, tax reform, I want to add one. How Senator Baldwin plans to vote against Supreme Court Justice Kaufman. And
Kavanaugh, yes. I just don't know if that's going to hurt her, because we're not really a Trump state. Yes, he won in November, both with a plurality, 47%. He's been upside down.
22,000 votes.
Every Trump poll won. That I've seen since then has had him upside down. He was upside down before the election. So we're not like in Indiana, where Joe Donnelly's got a problem because Trump won there by double digits. You know, so I don't know if there's the same penalty for a Democratic incumbent voting against the governor or the president's agenda. Now, you go through those issues, you know, Leah's a nurse. She can talk on health care with some authority. She's going to hit Baldwin on the tax issue that she voted against that package. She's going to hit her on Medicare for All and how much it cost. I don't know, though, how much she'll have in resources to put that message out there compared to what Baldwin's had, because Baldwin finished July with like $6.7 million in the bank. Mm-hmm. Leah Vuk would not have $6 million in the bank to spend at the end of July. She has to find a way resource-wise to kind of not find parity necessarily, but be competitive. And I'm not sure it's there just yet.
Okay. I want to give the resolution of some primary races that you and Jesse highlighted last week. So let's come back to the first district. Randy Bryce, a Democrat, will be the Democratic nominee. And as Speaker Ryan gives up that seat, he got 59% of the vote. Brian Stile got 59% of the vote for Bryce, 51% for Brian Stile. Any PSs?
Larry Sabato's crystal ball on Thursday moved that race from toss-up to lean Republican. Part of it is before Randy Bryce was raising money hand over fist, in part because the chance to take out Speaker Ryan. Now Speaker Ryan is gone. It's just another Republican-leaning seat on a long list of Republican-leaning seats to toss-ups that Dems could win in November to flip the House. They need roughly 2,000 votes, 2,000 seats to flip control of the House.
2,000 seats? Could mm-hmm. clarify that. 2,000?
Two dozen seats.
Thank you. 2,000 seats.
So if I'm a Democrat looking where to put my money, do I put it here or do I put it in one of those, the 24 best seats or 30 best seats? I'm not sure where that debt district ranks in that list of the best seats to go play in. So that'll decide whether, you know, the resources are now. If it's a blue wave, hey, all bets are off. But mm-hmm. even in, like, the Supreme Court race, which was not a perfect kind of measure because it wasn't true, you know, R versus D, but Rebecca Dowd didn't win the first congressional district, even though she won the state by a dozen points. So that tells you that it takes a big wave to win the first congressional if you're a Democrat.
Well, and having interviewed both Democratic candidates in the 7th U.S. House District against Duffy, went up to Marshfield for that. Margaret Engbritzen, a military vet and an attorney, beat the former head of the Marshfield Clinic, who is a kidney specialist, Brian Ewert. So it'll be Engbritzen. I'm having trouble with her name, against Duffy. Is that considered to be close?
No, I mean, Duffy's done a pretty good job of locking up that district. It's Republican-leaning. It's Trump country. It's like he's done a good job up there. So I don't really see that one being competitive. It's all the focus is going to be on the first, and if there's an opportunity there. I mean, Republicans are talking about the Randy Bryce baggage, his 9 arrests, these other things, falling behind child support, owing an ex-girlfriend money.
59% of the vote.
They're going to, yeah, well, he's got resources. I have never seen a first-time House candidate raise $6-plus million through the pre-primary
Bernie
period.
Wrapped his arms around him, came there,
He's been burning through cash left and right, though. That's another issue for Bryce is he's going through it so quickly to keep raising money. I don't know if the pace will slow because there's no longer Speaker Ryan. It's just, again, Republican-leaning seat. There's a chance there. But I think right now, like I said, crystal ball has it leaning Republican for a reason.
Okay, let's look at three other primary outcomes. In the 59th district, open Tim Rantham. I know you're going to come back to him later. He won the Republican primary in the 77th Assembly District in Madison. Dane County is going to have its first African American member of the Assembly with Sheila Stubbs. And John Spiros was challenged by the Mosinee mayor. He had no trouble with him, right?
No. So both Rantham and Stubbs have no opponent on the November ballot, so they're barring a miraculous writing campaign, they're guaranteed being members of the Assembly come January.
Right. Okay. I want to look at one other thing. There are 11 Milwaukee Democrats in the Assembly. 11 Democrats represent the city of Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. Three of them will be brand new in January. You have Maricel Cabrera ousting Josh Zebnick with that baggage mm-hmm. from Unwanted Kissing. LaKeisha Myers beat Fred Kessler. He's kind of been an institution. I think he first served in the 1970s as a former judge. Kessler told me at the Democratic Convention he expected the toughest race in his career. He got it. He's out of there. And Kaylin Haywood will win the seat of retiring Representative Leon Young. So I'm just pointing out 11 Milwaukee Democrats, and three of them will be brand new.
Yeah. Worth noting that Keisha Myers got about, $57,000 that neck of the woods from a group financed by Chris Abley. Little backstory, Fred Kessler endorsed Chris Larson for county executive against Chris Abley.
And he told me at the Democratic Convention that's why, he also endorsed Mandela Barnes when she ran against Lena Taylor. Mm-hmm. So Fred Kessler told me this was payback that the Senator Taylor helped recruit the next Assembly member from the District 12, LaKeisha Myers.
But when you're talking about lower turnout primaries in August, $57,000 is a lot of money.
Yeah.
And that probably helped. You know, also, you have to recognize Fred Kessler is one of several white lawmakers in the Assembly Democratic Caucus who represented majority minority districts. You know, that district is 55% African American.
It is.
And you never know for sure how that plays in a race. Evan Gwaike also represents majority minority district.
Yes,
got
he
a
does.
Primary challenge, but
yes.
Won it handily, in part because people tell me he works hard on issues that are important to his constituents. Like he was the Democratic voice on the youth prison issue
yes.
and getting that bill through. I mean, he worked on that. So
to the point where the governor in one of those public speeches, credited Evan Goyke with his work on that. And it's rare for that Republican governor to give praise to a Democrat.
Note, Mr. Haywood, I believe, is not the youngest member ever of the Assembly, but awfully close. Also, his father's a well-known developer in Milwaukee. It was a contest of two prominent African-American families in Milwaukee with Supreme, his mother is Gwen Moore,
yes,
Congresswoman. His family's well-known as
a developer. Finished second in that.
So, and Mr. Haywood was backed by a group, Leaders for a Better Community, I believe it is, that has ties with Sherwin Hughes, has been kind of a figure in Milwaukee politics for a long time. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what path Mr. Haywood takes going forward, because he's a college student coming in the Assembly.
Okay, now let's talk about tweets. Let's talk about Sunday when the President of the United States said it would be a great idea if
great
there was a
exclamation point.
Great, thank you. A great idea if Harley was boycotted. Harley Davidson built in Milwaukee. And Monday, that backed the governor into a corner. And people kept saying, governor, respond, governor, respond. They put out a statement, I want Harley to succeed. That didn't cut it. Finally, the governor had to tweet, of course I don't want a boycott of Harley Davidson. Then on Tuesday, the next day, so you're looking at Sunday tweet by the president, Monday tweet by the governor. Tuesday, Governor Walker is a tremendous governor who has done incredible things for the state. A little awkward for Scott Walker?
We've talked about this. If you are a Republican office holder and you challenge the president, what's your upside? So how do you stand up to the president for a Milwaukee icon or Wisconsin icon like Harley Davidson without like crossing him? Because you don't want to have President Trump
and the governor owns a Harley vroom vroom.
Yep. So now Walker's people insisted he was very clear on Sunday he didn't want to boycott. I don't think that was very clear in their statement that I read. But Trump is going to be a factor in these races from now through November. He can change the entire climate with a tweet storm, it seems like these days, or a news conference. I mean, the numbers sometimes just like are wild with him. What's going to be interesting to watch is if he's generating the headwind for Republicans, how do they approach him? They need a combination of if they can get the Trump voter in Western Northern Wisconsin who turned out for them in November of 16 and their traditional base like in the Milwaukee suburbs, that's good. But embracing Trump gets these guys, it also turns off these voters over here. So how do you navigate that? What's the path going to be? I'm not quite clear about it yet. I think they're all trying to feel their way about how to make this work. By the way, will President Trump campaign in Wisconsin? Now, he endorsed Walker, Stile, and Vukmir.
Yeah.
Where does he go? I will bet you money he goes up to northern or western Wisconsin, somewhere around there. Maybe he goes to Milwaukee. If I'm a Democrat, I'm going to run ads if I'm, you know, about Leah Vukmir embracing Donald Trump, but not in Wausau, not in Eau Claire. I'm going to run him in Milwaukee and Madison. You get, if you understand why, because you don't want to excite the Trump voter to come out, but you might want to excite the anti-Trump voter to say, well, I'm not really happy about that. What I'm
right, saying. Right. I want to cover one topic before we get into stock reports. Ashland County documented the additional cost to the sheriff's office, clerk of courts, district attorney, and Department of Human Services of largely methamphetamine. And they calculated these soaring costs, and they asked the voters on Tuesday to raise their property taxes. $1 million a year, but if you owned a house that was valued at $100,000, it would cost you $83 million. And this was...
$83.
Yes, million. Thank you. $83. $83. Sorry for that error. They were rejected almost 2-1. So the significance here is you had the first county, Ashland, only 15,000 residents. Their median household income is 31% below the state average. And they rejected this. But Mark O'Connell this morning told me, you're going to see this more and more because of levy limits on counties. As counties get squeezed to treat drug abuse, drug addiction, and prosecute them, you're going to see it more and more. So I just find it's interesting. The Ashland County executive told me, look, now we have to look at higher fees or less services. So I'm throwing that in there as a mark of things to come with counties' future referendums. Any thoughts on that?
No. I mean, it's often hard to get people to raise their taxes to pay for services, just the way it is.
Right. Mark O'Connell said, look, this involves something that most residents don't want to have to use, drug treatment or addiction, and hope none of their beloved family members mm-hmm. have to use. Okay, I'm done with that. Stock picks.
So Rising Tim Rantham. So I've never seen in my career covering politics a four-way primary where one candidate didn't file a campaign finance report and won.
And you don't file a campaign finance
if
report
if you don't raise at least raise or spend at least $2,000. I think the threshold is $2,000. It's more interesting is that four-way race, two other candidates, one was backed by American Federation for Children, so school choice group. One was endorsed by Jesse Kramer, the outgoing representative, and Dewey Strobel, the state senator, and this guy still won. And I can't find anybody who knows for sure why. There are theories. He's run before, so maybe he saw the yard signs in his garage. There are theories of he's on the school board, and he's been a kind of a well-known face in a fight about an issue there. Maybe that helped him. But I have never seen that dynamic in a primary. He is my surprise of Tuesday night. Absolutely, hands down.
Didn't spend enough money to file a report. Or pocket change. Okay. Next.
So speaking of pocket change, Chris Ailey dropped $300,000 on the active sheriff in his campaign.
Didn't go well.
But he also spent in two assembly primaries and connected. So you have Lakeisha Myers with the $57,000 roughly. And you also have, in Jim Ott's district, he backed the woman who won that primary. So he's still playing in primaries. He did it in the spring. He had a mixed record then, too. And I've asked people, like, why does he keep doing this, you know? And the perspective that was pointed to me was, you know, Chris Ailey didn't come up through the legislature or the county board. He was a wealthy guy who ran for office. He didn't build up these chips we talk about politics of, you know, I help you, you help me, you know, we're loyal. He's got to build a team in some ways or a network of support. So this is his way of doing it. And he is very, 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 very wealthy. So $300,000 is not, like, that big a deal, I guess. Still, you know, he also, with the sheriff, when I pick up, he's worked well with him. And after how he got along with Sheriff Clark, which they didn't get along with Sheriff Clark, that was a welcome reprieve. Now the question is, how does Ernell Lucas work with the county executive going forward after he backed his opponent? And it's something to watch.
But Ernell Lucas is no David Clark.
No.
Right.
Not at all.
Okay. Falling.
So Dick Uihlein,
Illinois billionaire?
Must be a nice problem to have, but he spent, I don't know, $11 million, depending on what you look at. I had not seen, like, the final numbers for the primary, but he spent some $11 million on Kevin Nicholson, and Kevin Nicholson finished in second. Honestly, if it weren't for Uihlein's checkbook, I don't know if we even talked about Kevin Nicholson. I mean, he would be a guy running a great profile with a shoestring budget trying to win state office. Instead, he was a legitimate threat to win the GOP nomination for U.S. Senate, in part because of Dick Uihlein. Now the question is, what's Dick Uihlein going to do? I called two groups who did stuff for him. Club for Growth, which had its Club for CFG Action Wisconsin. Restoration PAC said, are you guys going to be committed to the Senate race now? The answer was, we're checking the... Basically, they were non-committal.
Right.
So Club for Growth said, we're going to watch the environment. Uh-huh. Well, what's that mean? What does Dick Uihlein do? Where does he put his money? Now, he's been a very generous donor to the state party, to Governor Walker, so he may still stay involved in Wisconsin with those avenues, but will he help Leah Vukmir? I don't know. There's supposed to be a unity fundraiser Friday night with both Uihlein and Diane Hendricks, who backed Vukmir. Mm-hmm. Will they be there? I don't know. But it's a big question about what he's going to do going forward, because he made a big bet and he lost.
Right. And let's go back to Governor for a minute. You know, with all the negative ads, what got lost is the governor this week came out with a plan, a $5,000 tax credit for technical and college graduates who live and work in Wisconsin, and a tax credit for working families. So you have potential serious policies that just get lost in the negativity, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on.
So. There really is. And what do you look for? Number one thing you're going to look for in Charles Franken poll next week.
Is there a bounce for either Tony Evers or Leah Vukmir? I mean, traditionally there's, like we talk about, post-convention bounce, a post-primary bounce. The hard thing is going to be, we haven't had a poll in either race since, I think, the June survey. There wasn't one
That's
in
right.
July.
Right.
So is there one? That'll be something to watch for and see what's going on there. Don't forget, in June, Mark Franklin had Evers down 4, just outside the first margin of error to Walker, I think, if I remember right. But then we had NBC had Evers up 13. Emerson had Evers up 7. So where is this race? And, oh, by the way, I haven't asked Franklin this, but are they going to survey likely voters or registered voters now? I can't remember when they flipped the switch to likelies, because that could also change the dynamic. I remember we talked about the Dem enthusiasm, and it may not be a perfect measure, but you can't deny there are more Democrats voting on Tuesday than Republicans. So what's that mean for November?
And Franklin in June had Walker's approval 49-47. So as you said earlier, Wisconsin voters have an opinion on Scott Walker.
Republicans keep pointing to the right track, wrong track number. They think that is Walker's true ceiling. that even though people may go, well, I don't really like the guy, but I like where things are going with my property taxes and whatnot, that that's the number to watch. As long as it stays above water, they feel okay. Democrats feel like where Walker is at is where he's at. He cannot change the, he cannot turn around this giant battleship on a dime and be somebody he's not. So they think it's baked in for him.
Okay, we love this stuff too much, but we better end the show. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for the week of Wisconsin's August primary.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.